I need to loop discernment and healing together. You can't have good discernment until you've done some healing work. When you haven't really processed through events in the past, there's no way to accurately decipher the present. Past stuff will get in the way. It's just a matter of when and how, okay? It will get in the way. I want to highlight what's possible when you do the healing work because your discernment is enhanced. Your discernment is better. Discernment is the ability to perceive. And of course, you want to be able to perceive accurately. What I think it is what it actually is. That's good discernment. And so what you want to discern when you have this projection pickle is the trigger that I'm experiencing in the present legitimately something that's happening right here and right now? Or am I having an experience of my past being projected into the present and what's happening right here, right now isn't even all that?
I am Taylor Chandler. I'm a licensed therapist, host of this podcast, Boundaries and Grace, and leader of my practice, Reattach. My mission is to help you shift to secure attachment, uprooting anxiety and avoidance, replacing with clarity and peace. You will shift.
Today, we're talking about attachment wounds. What are they? What do they look like? What's the effect? And what do we do about them? Let me start here. Okay, so there's secure attachment and there's insecure attachment. When you're insecurely attached, you are anxious or withdrawn or vacillating between the two. You're unsure of yourself and others, especially in terms of close, intimate relationships. How is it that we have so many people who are insecurely attached? We'll focus on one aspect of that today, and that's the wounding that happens in our relationships when we're children, like with parents, attachment bases, friends along the way, and then ultimately romantic partners in adulthood. Attachment wounds can happen at any point in time. The ones that especially put insecure attachment in motion are the ones that happen in childhood. Attachment wounds, we're going to talk about those things today. Attachment wounds happen when there is a disruption in what should have been a safe, secure connection. Think about some of y'all like me, we had dial-up. You could not be on the internet and somebody be on the phone at the same time because it would disrupt the connection. An attachment wound is like if you were on the internet and doing your thing in the AOL chat room, okay? Someone picks up the phone and suddenly connection is severed. Attachment wounds, there is a severance in the connection between us. Experiences of rejection and abandonment create attachment wounds. Some definitions. These are from the Oxford Dictionary. Rejection, the dismissing or refusing of a proposal, idea, etc. Define refuse, indicating that one is not willing to do something. The spurning of a person's affections. What does spurn mean? Spurn is to reject with disdain or contempt, to strike, to tread on, I tread on you, to push away with the foot. This is rejection. Abandon, definition, cease to support or look after someone. To desert, give up completely, leave a place empty or uninhabited without intending to return. Already, this is sounding a bit triggering. The development of your attachment starts way back in childhood, so let's go back there. A child is totally dependent on the parent, the adult, the attachment base. Even if it's not your biological parent, care happens in functional ways, but care also happens or should happen in emotional and psychological ways. As a child, functional ways of caring looks like keeping you alive, keeping you housed, having clothes on your body, keeping you warm, feeding you, that kind of thing. There's also emotional and psychological care, and that's things like validation, assurance, consistency in my behavior towards you. That's a way that we care for someone's emotional and psychological needs for safety. Two things are happening when there are persistent gaps with your functional and or emotional psychological care. One thing that's happening is that needs aren't getting met, and so I'm in a deficit. There are many implications to that, some being physical starvation, which is terrible, but there's also emotional starvation when you aren't being emotionally fed. It might feel like I have a strong need for others' approval because I felt so rejected. Number two, stress. Okay, I can't take my guard down. I'm vigilant. I'm skeptical because I am not protected. Number three, overcompensating. Burnout. I have to do more than is developmentally appropriate. I'm talking about children, right? I have to do more than is developmentally appropriate or rely on people that I don't actually trust. I have no other choice but to rely on you. It's like, if that's the best I can get, the child has to find some sort of base. Calling someone a base or an environment a base doesn't necessarily mean it was a good place to be, but it does mean that it's where I consistently find some sort of comfort and belonging. And someone's emotional, psychological, or physical needs are not being met where they should have been met, which is definitely in the actual home with the people who birthed you. When those things are not being met, I have to find that somewhere else, even when that environment is not conducive to healthy living. The second and last thing that I'm going to highlight when it comes to persistent gaps in care, the second big consequence of this is internalization. Which essentially means that I'm taking your behavior towards me and I make it to mean something about me. Children are especially susceptible to this because they really don't have anything else to attribute your behavior to other than their own self. A little bit more about internalization. So I take your behavior and I make it mean something about me. I develop beliefs about who I am based on how you treat me. When I experience you as rejecting or abandoning, I can develop beliefs like I'm not worth your time or attention. I can't trust people. I'm here in the world alone. I'm by myself. Things like that. The beliefs that come out of those experiences are especially detrimental and have long-lasting and long-reaching effects in your life. These ideas become woven into your personality profile, your self-concept. Who I think that I am, which then comes out in my behaviors, my decisions, thoughts, and feelings. How I feel about me is the greatest indicator of why I do what I do and how I do it. Let's talk specifically about what rejection and abandonment looks like, because rejection and abandonment, I think about those like categories of experiences, but then there are all of these ways that we reject and can be rejected, that we abandon and can be abandoned. First, we'll highlight rejection and abandonment between parent and child, and then we'll talk about what that looks like between adults. These are some ways that this shows up between parent and child. Not showing up, being unavailable physically and or emotionally. Oftentimes that's due to things like emotional maturity. It can be a mood disorder that prevents someone from showing up, something like depression, incarceration, substance abuse, having children out of wedlock. Like there's a whole lot right there. When there isn't equal opportunity, I think that's a really triggering thing. But when there is an equal opportunity for that child to experience the full presence of one or both parents, that can lead to a rejection and abandonment wounds. Not being at your games or school performances. They don't show up to the parent-teacher meetings. Not picking you up from school. Not knowing if someone's going to show up when they said that they would. It might look like explicitly minimizing your thoughts or feelings. That sounds like children should be seen and not heard. Might have sounded like, I'll give you something to cry about. Big girls or big boys don't cry. And not just verbally saying it, but having the emotional experience of not mattering. Those kinds of experiences can lead to internalized rejection, AKA I am rejectable. Other ways that we wound: criticizing appearance, prioritizing work over family, verbal put downs, broken promises. Now let's move on to ways that rejection and abandonment can happen between adults. That can look like not showing up or acknowledging important events like birthday, anniversary, promotions, broken promises. Prioritizing other things over the relationship that can then make someone feel emotionally insecure. Even if I have all of the things that I need to live. And so the same things that trigger children are the same things that trigger adults in so many ways. let's keep moving. If someone's unresponsive or stonewalling, ignoring calls, texts, blocking, especially in conflict or to punish the other person or even to try to save yourself or to try to reduce your own anxiety, but that other person ends up being locked out. It can also look like bulldozing, where there's not a whole lot of concern in the moment about the other person's thoughts or feelings. You're just trying to get them to get what you feel. You want them to get your experience. Being hot and cold with me, okay? You're inconsistent. And so it feels like you don't really want me or I'm not acceptable to you at all times.
Hey y'all, quick interruption. If you have not already gone over to YouTube to subscribe to my channel, please take a moment to do that. Open up the app, type in at I am Taylor Chandler in the search bar, and there you'll see me. Press the subscribe button, turn your notifications on. Let's build the channel and get back to the episode.
We've all had attachment wounds to some degree at some point in our lives. The ones that stick, the ones that really impact us, are the ones that come from significant figures, parents especially, and when those wounds were not attended to with the quality of care that is congruent with the pain, the emotional distress that it caused. This is the Band-Aid on a bullet wound idea that you can't cover up something big and deep with something small. Although many try, sometimes that's all they have, and sometimes we don't even know how important or how significant the wound is, so we really haven't communicated that to the other person. Anyway, regardless of why the wound was not cared for or attended to, the point is I make that mean something about me, and those wounds have yet to be resolved. Those are the types of wounds that stick. It might sound something like this. If I show my feelings, I'm not a real man. If he shows his feelings, he's not a real man. It might sound like I'm not capable of caring for myself. I need somebody else to do it. It might sound like I'm not capable of caring for you. You get somebody else to do it. It might sound like I can only count on myself. I am the doer. I am the functioning one. I'm the one to be dependent on, and I do not depend on other people. I can have these experiences from the past that I pull meaning from. I make it such a part of me that I think that it's me, when really it is a result of the way that I relate to those attachment wounds, those relationship traumas that I had in the past. I want to be even more clear. Let's use this one. I'm the one to be dependent on, and I cannot depend on anyone else. Let's say that you are an adult that has that concept of yourself and other people, that you are the one that's got to keep it all together and other people aren't as able as you. You're the glue. That is something that I believe about me to the point where I think that it's a part of my personality, when really that's a result of the experience of not being able to count on someone else consistently to care for me, to show up for me, to be there for me, especially as a child when I could not do it on my own or it was not developmentally appropriate for me to do it. When these types of issues are not resolved, we run into projection. Projections harm our relationships because you're essentially making someone in the present, in the now, responsible for experiences that they were not actually a part of. Let me give you an example. My father worked a lot and did not spend time with me. I would ask him to come to my games and to my school plays. He said he loved me, but that he couldn't be there. I felt unimportant. I believed I was unimportant. Now I am with a man who works a lot and is showing interest in me. When he says he has a meeting or needs to work on a project, I become passive aggressive, becoming short in my responses, making passive aggressive comments about his coworkers. Who is this? I'm taking my experience from the past and what I took it to mean about me, unimportant, not worth it, that kind of thing, and projecting it onto my man today. I don't leave room for other alternatives. I think I already know how the story ends. I'm gonna end up begging for attention and he's gonna end up rejecting me. But before we do the work, before we really start to unlayer these wounds from our past and how it's playing out in the present, we're not thinking about all that stuff consciously. We're just acting it out. Let me just highlight one line here. When he says he has a meeting or needs to work on a project, I become passive aggressive. The key projection moment. So I had my past. Dad didn't show up to my games or school plays. I took it to mean something about me, right? Internalization, your behavior, your decision now means something about me. I internalized it because I haven't done anything with it. I've developed this belief about work, about my value in relationships, about men, how they value relationships, or if they care about my feelings or not, right? I can develop all of these ideas. And the projection piece is that I treat you as if the ideas that I have in mind that are dysfunctional and negative, and I treat you as if it's true, as if it's the only reality that's available to me. Hence, I come to this conclusion, I'm gonna end up begging for attention and he's going to reject me just like dad. Again, this is just one example. We could come up with so many, but let's keep going with this one. So is it possible that you're with another workaholic like your dad? It's possible. It's also possible that the person that you're dating now had a life before you, and maybe he hasn't integrated you in the way that he would if you all were in a serious relationship. It's also possible that he just does not know your needs and he does have more capacity for meeting those needs than you think that he does. It's also possible that you're jumping to conclusions and catastrophizing a situation before you really communicated your thoughts and feelings effectively. So we have a bit of a pickle. I know how this works. You don't want to get played. You don't want to miss red flags. And at the same time, though, you're realizing at the same time, you want to be able to have grace and you want to be willing to compromise with your partner. There are real questions that people struggle with here. How do you know if you're dealing with a real problem in the present, a real like imbalance with the work and relationship? Is that a real problem? Or am I projecting the past into this moment? How do you know if the other person has a legitimate concern or if they're projecting onto you? These are all great questions, and there is not a black or white answer. In other words, there's no particular behavior that necessarily means that it's a real problem or a projection. There's not like this very simple way to decipher. So we have to actually use emotional intelligence, which naturally means that context matters, nuance is real, and communication is necessary to be able to handle the situation appropriately. There's so much to say about that. We're going to do a whole episode on emotional intelligence, EQ. But let's talk about one part that is more about self-awareness than other awareness, because emotional intelligence needs both. You need to be really aware of yourself, and you also need to be able to be aware of others and manage social interactions well. But today we're going to talk about using discernment to help resolve this projection pickle. It's about how you're reading things and are you accurately categorizing the experiences that you're having. I need to loop discernment and healing together. You can't have good discernment until you've done some healing work. When you haven't really processed through events in the past, there's no way to accurately decipher the present. Past stuff will get in the way. It's just a matter of when and how, okay? It will get in the way. I want to highlight what's possible when you do the healing work, because your discernment is enhanced. Your discernment is better. Discernment is the ability to perceive. And of course, you want to be able to perceive accurately. What I think it is what it actually is. That's good discernment. And so what you want to discern when you have this projection pickle is the trigger that I'm experiencing in the present legitimately something that's happening right here and right now? Or am I having an experience of my past being projected into the present and what's happening right here, right now isn't even all that? Answer, nervous system is a great place to look, your nervous system. Trauma is stored in our body, and rejection and abandonment are relational traumas. So when these experiences are triggered, your body reacts. Your bodies, your emotions are experiencing the memory of a past event. And it has a physiological reaction, a body reaction. Physiological signs might include racing hearts, shallow breathing, nausea, tight chest, shaking, especially if you experience those signs outside of present triggering moments, outside of your relationship, and you're experiencing physiological reactions to things just out in the world where nothing's going on, or with people who you don't even really know like that. Further, if you know that you have past stuff that has yet to be resolved, for sure you should be erring on the side of projection. You should be erring on the side of personal responsibility. If I'm being triggered in the present and we're like, where is all of this anger or sadness coming from? Or I don't know how to handle conflict really well. And I'm not really sure if I'm projecting or if I'm in the present, but I've never been to therapy and I've never really checked. I want you to err on the side of personal responsibility and say that it's, and you again, if you know that you got stuff in the past that you have not touched, or you have stuff in the past that you've talked about before, but you just got a feeling that it really wasn't fleshed out the way that you think it might need to be, okay? It is more likely that my past is getting in the way of the present than I realize. So on one side of the coin, we're answering the question, how do I know if I'm projecting or present? On the other side of that same coin, the question is, how do I know if someone else is projecting or present? Am I really as big of a problem as you're saying that I am? Am I really as toxic as you say? Or are you projecting onto me? How do I know? Maybe some of you that are like, I really want to take responsibility for myself. I really want to be that accountable partner in relationship, but I also don't want to get played into taking more responsibility than is actually mine. Totally fair. I get it. Let's talk about it. You do have to be willing to see when you've really done something that triggered someone else, even if it wasn't your intention, okay? Intention and impact are very different things. It doesn't have to be your intention to cause distress, okay? But if that's the impact that it caused, it's a sign of emotional maturity and definitely of secure attachment that you're able to still take responsibility for that. It doesn't mean feel bad about yourself, but it does mean saying like, if I did it again, I would do it differently. Or I take responsibility for the impact that that caused. Impact and intention are different things. For example, you said you would call when you got back from the bachelorette party, and that was supposed to be by 2 a.m., but your person doesn't hear from you until 11 a.m. the next day. I'm gonna give you the benefit of the doubt. Girl, let's say you were really in by 2. You really did do it. You were really in it by 2. 1:45 a.m., you was in there. You fell asleep. It was Bourbon Street. Okay. Your intention was to call and it didn't happen, but the impact was that your person was concerned and upset. Just because that person is upset with you the next day doesn't mean that they have some sort of like mommy and daddy issues. It's you. Like, it's actually you. And even if they did have mommy and daddy issues that are playing a part in how they're seeing, reading the situation, even if they did have mommy and daddy issues, you still didn't call when you were supposed to. They still didn't hear from you till 11 a.m. the next day. This brings me to my sidebar, y'all. Remember when I said that this isn't like, there's not a black and white answer to this whole projection pickle thing? This was part of what I meant. Rather than something being all projection or all present problem, it's so often some of both. I don't think that anybody gets away from projections altogether. Just like I don't think anyone gets away from some degree of anxiety altogether. I just think that you manage it better. That's a lot more realistic than saying, I'm never gonna project in this relationship. It's much more realistic, a much better goal to say, if and when I do, I'm going to have the skill to be able to manage that well, and I'm committed to do so, okay? Sometimes something's not so obvious as you obviously didn't call me back when you said that you would while you were on your girls trip, okay? If and when that happens and you're in that position of someone having a triggered response towards you and you really can't put your finger on where it's coming from, what can you do real quickly? I can ask questions about specificity so that I can better locate my offense. Sometimes when a person is triggered in the present, they're just giving you emotion, not being specific about what has caused them to feel that way. Now, I absolutely believe that people should be striving to be able to communicate effectively in those moments. It just doesn't always happen. So let's just be real. And sometimes you're the one doing the work first before your person or people that you're connected with. Instead of expecting everyone to be on your level or at this super high, highly emotionally intelligent level, I think it's also helpful to help people understand how to deal with the majority population, okay? Which isn't that emotionally intelligent as a whole. Anyway, so sometimes someone's just giving you emotion. They're not being specific about what has caused them to feel that way. So of course, with the caveat of not using this for gaslighting purposes, you can ask someone to let you know what it was that you did, how it made them feel, and you can empathize with them even if you know it wasn't your intention. Again, if you know what you did, you need to be able to just say that. Don't run somebody all around the block talking about, could you be more specific, when you know you didn't call back when you were supposed to call back. Like, that's just, don't do that. Don't do that. Validating someone's experience of you is often more important to that person than you just agreeing with everything that they say. Someone really, more often than not, wants to know that you feel them, like you can understand where they're coming from, rather than you necessarily feeling exactly what they feel or seeing it exactly the way that they see it. Now, if someone does require you to literally see and experience the same moment the same way that they do, that can be a sign of their own emotional immaturity. Not always, but sometimes. You might be catching on that there are a lot of things to consider when it comes to relationships. And so the best thing that you can do, of course, is to set yourself up for success by actually managing the wounds that you have and being able to effectively resolve the past and handle your projections so that you're relating better in the present. In order to manage attachment wounds better, you need to, number one, develop emotional maturity. And how do you do that? You have to go through the process, a process that you can engage in therapy. Emotional maturity and secure attachment is not developed through podcasts or books. I don't care how well I explain anything. This is not the process of fixing these issues. This is information that helps to highlight what the problems are and what to do about them and how it's affecting you and other people, but it's not the process of fixing it. And so you've got to get into the process, and that process is therapy. We develop emotional maturity and secure attachment through actual experiences of increasing our self-awareness, other awareness, social awareness, and managing all of that better at the same time in real time. And that process requires real time work. So whether you're working with me or someone else, I hope you find someone that you can trust and who understands attachment so they can help you with this process. I tell my clients that this is not a blind process that they're entering into. I have a 12-week program. You should fully expect to not only have a grasp on your attachment, but to see real tangible results and productivity in your relationships, better relationships, more affection, more expression, more confidence. You should have real results, and you will if you're working with me. There's a link in the description where you can fill out a one-on-one form, and then I will reach out to you. If you think I have what you need, we'll get you started. I'm excited for you, and I need your help to get the word out. Please share this video, like the video, comment, press the subscribe button. If you haven't already, you know all of the things. Thanks, y'all, for listening. I will see you next week. Bye.